Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Sacrifice by Miranda Bridges. Narrated by Oliver Highpoint and Mia Madison. Prologue. Rylan. The Past. There's a female nearby. I inhale deeply, pulling the damp prison air into my lungs to fully experience her enticing scent. It streams through my nostrils, sweeps past my tongue, and invigorates my senses. My tail twitches and my chest rises as the essence of her fills me. My cock does both of those things as well. Not because I detect arousal from her, but due to how alluring she smells to me. My body's reaction is that of a male ready to breed his mate, to mark her as his so no one else would dare think to touch her, let alone fuck her. My scent on her body, my mark on her skin, my seed in her cunt, my kit in her belly. These thoughts are new to me, as foreign as my captivity. Morgia females, may fate smile upon them in their final resting place, held the power when it came time for breeding. They were the ones who would bestow their favor on a male and gift him the honor of servicing her body and impregnating her womb. He could be one of many to receive such favor. Yet, the owner of this tantalizing aroma has created a possessiveness that's overwhelming, not to mention new. To say I've never felt this way is an understatement. Jealousy over a female is not becoming of a warrior. If he is the fittest and most virile, then he needn't worry about competing with another male for her attention. But this female is mine, and I won't entertain the idea of anything else. She could be nothing more than a fabrication of my slowly rotting mind, brought on by my time spent in this prison, yet I disregard the thought. Even if this is a momentary reprieve, my psyche's last defense against the brutal torture I've endured, I welcome it with both hands. My nostrils flare when I inhale once again. This time, my body shudders with the pleasure of her natural fragrance. She's real. She has to be. And much closer now than before. In one fluid motion, I get to my feet and tread lightly on the calloused underside of my paws, slinking across the stone flooring to the door of my cell. My glowing blue eyes are beacons in the darkness, shining brighter than the moon's just outside. I'll be noticed if any guards were to pass by, but a chance to see this female is worth any punishment I might incur. I peer through the barred, square-shaped opening and quickly scan the immediate area, only to find no one about. Disappointment and frustration slams into my chest. Where is she?
Finding it hard to sleep, Morgia?
The raspy voice of the Silas creeps along my ears, interrupting my search for the female.
New blood walks these halls,
he says, his bright gaze drilling mine from across the corridor.
Is that what has garnered your attention? A lure strong enough to pull you out of your constant sulking?
My silence is his answer. Anything I say could invite further inquiry, and this female is not a subject I wish to discuss with Garrick, or anyone else for that matter. Although, there's no denying that conversing with a Silas is aggravating regardless. I rove my gaze over his features, taking in the smooth scales that completely cover him, and reflect the moonlight whenever he shifts from one foot to the other. That natural body armor, along with his venoms, make him a worthy opponent. He's a slippery bastard, though, in both his maneuvers and his words, just like the rest of his kind. Their penchant for barbs and thinly veiled threats isn't new, but they've grown more hostile with our captivity. Even so, he's confirmed the female isn't a hallucination, and it renders the sharpness of his insults dull. Nothing and no one can dampen my anticipation, not even the scaly bastard provoking me.
Do you think I can't see how eager you are for a mere glance of her?
The side of Garrick's mouth quirks, as does one of his brows.
I must admit, I want to see this new species as well. Her scent is unlike anything I've come across. I can say with certainty she's not a Morgia, nor a Silas.
Thank fate for that small reprieve, I mutter. He laughs, and it's more of a hissing noise than anything.
Finally, there's the internal fire you pride yourself on. Given your withdrawn countenance, I thought you were such a poor example of what the Morgias stand for.
Quiet, or the guards will come. The Silas narrows his gaze.
I don't fear them.
When I shoot him a look of disbelief, his glower morphs into a smirk.
Their death sticks are a different matter. You know as well as I do that if they didn't have their precious weapons, any of the Tolgan pitted against me in the arena would be slaughtered.
So you say. The Silas hisses, and his forked tongue briefly flicks out from between his fangs.
So I know. My skill has only improved.
He pauses and tilts his head, a glint reflecting from both his gaze and scales.
You will learn soon enough, Morgia. It won't be too long before we are paired in the arena and fighting to the death. Although ending your life is too lenient considering all that you're responsible for, I shall do this as a courtesy since we both served as commanders together. You could consider it an act of friendship.
Unwilling to let this challenge, however caustic, go unanswered, I turn to fully face him. We'll certainly fight, but in the end, you'll do it to stay alive, and I will kill you. I won't allow anything to stand in the way of my freedom. Or revenge. I inhale and release the breath now full of frustration. The female's scent has waned, so my chances of seeing her have lessened significantly. I clench my fist and release it, extending my claws and retracting them. The small shaft of light pouring through the window gleams off of their black crescent shapes. There's no disputing they are weapons. Lately, I have used them more times for offense than defense, but that is of no consequence. Staying in the middle of the ranks is paramount. As is finding this newcomer, this female who has my instincts heightened like never before, who has my blood blazing with something other than the heat of battle. It's the heat of lust.
Chapter 1. Ember, the Present.
This warrior is your assignment, the Tolgan says, extending a green hand. The two human women next to me stiffen, and my eyes widen until they dry out, forcing me to blink. I drag my gaze from Romic, the orc-like alien, to do a quick assessment of the room set in an ancient Roman style. It's lovely with its contrast between the dark-colored wood furniture and the golden-green color palette. None of that means shit, since the majority of it's damaged. Splintered pieces of wood are strewn about, and strips of material from the seat covers and the comforter lie in ribbons scattered everywhere. Complements of the creature, complete with horns, claws, and a tail, eyeing us from across the room. Is the Tolgan saying this beast is going to be my responsibility? I'm going to die. Specifically, I'll be eaten, and I'm not talking about the fun kind. In this hall dwell the most skilled warriors trained in this facility, Romic continues, like he didn't just give me a death sentence. The best fighters, who are a crowd favorite or win the most, are granted privileges not offered to those who lose. That gets my attention. What kind of privileges? I ask. It takes everything inside me to refrain from raising a skeptical brow or shrieking in horror. From my periphery, I catch the other human women leaning forward, their expressions of interest mirrored. I'm asking the question we all need, but don't really want the answer to. The Tulgin shrugs his meaty shoulders, as though my new occupation doesn't hold a gazillion possible outcomes for me, none of them appealing, and all of them frightening enough for me to consider risking death to escape. The orc continues speaking, his voice direct but mild, considering the fuming creature that's not too far away. The warden's confidence is probably due to the electric prodder fastened to his hip. I only needed to see how it worked one time for me to understand that it's lethal. They can range from simple tasks such as delivering their meals all the way up to caring for them intimately, Romek says. I purse my lips. Just how fucking intimate are we talking? Okay, so that question was a hell of a lot louder than I'd planned on, with profanity and definitely a lot more attitude. However, I think it's justified. And stupid. Very stupid. Melody, the auburn-haired woman I met like 5 minutes ago, gasps and presses a hand to her chest. Celine mutters an, "Oh, shit." If it wasn't me, I'd have said something along those same lines. The problem with being outspoken is sometimes you don't have a filter. Maybe I did, but it got lost or disappeared while I was in a cryogenic state for who knows how long. I'm a modern-day sleeping beauty, awakened just in time to die when Romek lunges for me. He's so freaking fast, I don't have time to do more than suck in a breath of surprise. His giant emerald-colored hand encircles my throat, his fingers touching at the nape of my neck. He yanks me to him, and I go flying into his chest, my body smacking into him and dangling like a rag doll. "If you speak to me like that again," he says with a sneer, "you'll find yourselves in the arena as fodder for the Akal." I nod vigorously, despite the restriction of his hand under my chin, and Romek releases me. My feet hit the stone floor with a thud, and I suck in lungfuls of air while massaging my throat. As soon as he turns in the beast's direction, Melody takes my hand in hers with a worried expression pinching her face. Celine gives me a look of understanding. So much for my bad bitch persona. It's hard to maintain that when Shrek almost kills you. "This is your attendant, Akal," the Tulgin says to the other male, gesturing to Melody. "Not the insolent one." When I make a face at the warden behind his back, the creature's gaze slides from Melody's snow-white complexion to me. I offer the Akal a look of compassion and understanding, not pity. I can't imagine he'd welcome any sympathy from me. But empathy? Well, I have a lot of that, being a fellow prisoner. The beast doesn't lose any of the animosity etched into every part of his face and body, but the flames of rage in his gaze lessen the tiniest bit. He's still scary as fuck, though. "What am I supposed to do, exactly?" Melody asks, her complexion paler than before. She's practically an albino.
"I have no need of her," the Akal says, his tone a deep rumble. "Take the female away."
All three of us women snap our gazes to the creature. For such a feral thing, he speaks in a well-mannered, learned way. It's a little jarring and completely unexpected, considering he tore this room apart. The Tulgin exhales and folds his arms.
"Your meals will be delivered by her, and any future wounds will be cleaned and dressed by the human as well. She can also polish armor, massage a knotted muscle, or groom you. This is all a gift because of your victories in the arena. Do you want me to tell the consortium that you rejected it?
The beast growls, and I can't determine if that was in acceptance or more of a kiss-my-ass type response. My money's on the second if I had any funds to wager.
I didn't think so.
Romek jerks his chin at me and Celine.
I'll return when I'm done giving the other warriors their prizes. But remember what I said about the humans being the Atori's property. If they are to be killed, it'll be the consortium's choice when and how, not yours.
Not mine either, apparently, I mumble. Both males flick their eyes to me, and I bow my head as if I didn't just say something insubordinate that could earn me another man... alien handling. The Akal cocks his head, and the movement draws my gaze to him. Instead of being lit with fire, his eyes sparkle with amusement. Or maybe I'm imagining things, because I'm not still right in the head after being strangled.
Our silent exchange is interrupted when Romek snatches my upper arm and yanks me toward him.
What did I say about that mouth of yours?
I hiss a breath in surprise, and at the tightness of his hold, bruising my tender skin. But I don't fight him. The last time he got angry with me, it was over quickly because I surrendered. It kept me alive, and that's more important than my pride. The Akal growls again, but this time it's different. It's a warning, I think.
I'm not sure who's more shocked, me or the Tulgan. We both stare at the beast with our mouths agape while blinking rapidly.
The creature's chest puffs out with his inhale, and another deep rumble fills the room. I stay rooted to the spot, but the handler doesn't.
Romek releases me to snatch up the metal rod secured to his waist, and with a sharp flick of the wrist, he extends the weapon. A bright light flares, and electricity crackles. Miniature bolts of orange lightning now zipping along the length. The beast doesn't move, and his growling doesn't lessen in volume or intensity. He has some big balls, and I don't mean literally because I haven't looked and have no plans to. Gross.
Don't threaten me, Akal.
Romek takes a menacing step forward.
You know the rules. As the warden, I can do anything to keep you in line as long as it won't kill you. There are lots of things that are worse than death.
My eyes are glued to the beast, so when he briefly flicks his gaze to me and then Melody, I catch it. I have no idea how long it's been since I last ate, so maybe I'm delirious because my blood sugar is plummeting, but I swear the creature connected with me on a deep level and is only trying to protect me, which is why I do the same. I dash from behind Romek and put myself directly in his path. I'm so close that the heat from his baton warms my face and the electrical currents make the ends of my blonde hair stand straight up. He jerks the weapon back as I hold out my arms in supplication.
It's my fault. I provoked the Akal when you weren't looking, I say. It was stupid, and I won't do it again.
Romek eyes me and shakes his head.
Your species is intelligent enough to articulate thought, but not enough to protect itself. If you keep up with this type of behavior, you'll be dead within a solar rotation.
He turns the weapon off and stows it away.
Come along, Thrallus. Hopefully you've learned your lesson, or the Atori will be angry at receiving such a useless tribute.
Okay, I say quietly, doing my best to appear contrite. He looks at Melody.
Stay here and tend to your warrior until I retrieve you. And for the love of the goddess, don't act like this female, or you'll end up dead before I return.
Melody nods. The Tulgan gestures to the door in an unspoken command, and I head in his direction with my head bowed. I'm not sorry in the least, but I use the demure position to sneak a glance at the beast. His focus is already on me, and when our eyes meet, there's a flash of confusion in his gaze, along with a gleam of respect? Admiration? Maybe I'll never know. I'm already through the door and in the hall with Romek barking an order for me to remember my place. I ignore him, already apprehensive about the next alien two doors down. I'm right to be in that headspace. The very sight of the snake man inside the room has me shrieking. To be fair, Celine mutters an, "Oh, fuck," this time. I smother the sound of my horror immediately, but it doesn't go unnoticed. The male grins, exposing his fangs, and hisses at me. His black forked tongue flaps and undulates, making my stomach clench. The gem-colored scales on his bare chest gleam in the light of the room as he steps closer. At least he's on two legs instead of slithering on his belly like an earthen serpent, even if he is covered from head to toe in scales. I wonder if his dick is covered in... Nope, not going there. "What have we here, Tulgin?" the male asks, eyeing me through vertical pupils. "Females to fuck. If I'd have known that was the prize waiting for me, my opponents would have died that much faster." Romek taps his baton in warning, and the snake's grin widens. "They are not here for you to use for sexual purposes, Silas," the warden says. "You'll receive a single attendant, one that's here as a gift to serve you and meet any basic needs, such as tending to your wounds or delivering your meals." "Fucking is a basic need," the male's pointed tongue flicks out once more. "Their scent is not unpleasant. Are you certain they're not to be rutted? It would certainly help me in the arena. Imagine how much pressure that could relieve for me." "Your hand doesn't look broken," I mutter. Damn it, will I ever learn? I swing my gaze to Romek, an apology already working its way from my mouth. "I'm sorry." The Tulgin glares at me in warning, and the snake hisses out a laugh. "She's a funny little thing," the Silas says. "Can she service me now, or am I to have the dark-haired one?" Romek tilts his head toward Celine. "She is your personal attendant, and the human better be alive when I return, Halvar." "Excellent." The Silas grins at Celine, and my palm itches to slap him. "Oh, Ralty," he says. "You and I are going to have great fun together. Don't come back too fast, Tulgin. I want plenty of time to enjoy my prize this evening." I take a chance on cultural differences and give him the finger. It makes me feel better, and hopefully it won't get me killed. The snake narrows his gaze at me. "What is she doing?" "Most likely insulting you, Silas," Romek says. "Let's go, female. Soon you'll be too busy to give hand gestures." "Oh, yes, she will." Halvar gives me a look that sends chills along my arms. The Morja will absolutely love her temperament. "Remember, the human is not to be fucked, Silas," Romek says. "Their species is not here for copulation, only servitude." Halvar scoffs. "So you keep saying." I take Celine's hand and give it a quick squeeze. "Good luck." My whisper is nearly inaudible, but she nods right before squaring her shoulders. She's likely to do better with the snake than I am. I think I'd die of fright if he touched me. The Tulgin leads me from the room, and I throw one more bird at the Silas. However,
That asshole was right. The Morja scares me most of all. Unlike the rest of the creatures I've seen so far, he's the only one with a collar. And I'm definitely not talking about the fun kind. The second we enter his room, the male roars, the sound causing me to trip over myself. I jump back, pressing my spine to the wall, and inch my way to the door. Romek has a weapon, but I don't, so he can stay here and deal with this shit on his own. The telltale sound of the baton being activated has the Morja shutting his jaws. Romek steps toward him. Control yourself, or I'll make you. Understand, Morja? Now that the alien isn't scaring the piss out of me, I take a good look at him. The male is a griffin. The top portion of his body is humanoid, but the fur lining his skin gradually thickens and darkens so that both his legs are completely covered. The muscles of his thighs and calves are shaped like a human's, but look like a lion's. A matching tail swishes back and forth in a slicing motion, but the male doesn't say anything or make any other noises. His face is similar to that of a human's, and his hair is similar to my own, blonde. However, he has a set of wings made of golden and pearly hues in a breathtaking combination, and he has little griffin-like ears made up of tiny, pure white feathers. His species is the most terrifying and extraordinary. Romek gives his spiel about my role in this place. All the while, I watch the Morja, taking note of how his gaze roves over me. It's not in a licentious way, like the Silas. It's a deep scrutinization, very calculating, very cold. If the Akal's eyes held flames, then this guy's hold shards of ice. Do you understand, Alexei? Romek asks. Given your penchant for obstinance, this gift is a singular opportunity and will not be offered going forward. You won't have access to her if you refuse to follow the rules or if you don't maintain your high rank. My rank is nothing you need to worry about, Tulgin. The Morja taps the metal encircling his neck with a black claw that has me swallowing. You know I won't have real freedom until I'm in my true form. It definitely gives you something to think about, Romek says, his tone sardonic. Then he looks at me and points toward Alexei. Do as he says. Although I gave the Akal my empathy and the Silas my derision, I have nothing to give the winged creature except my courage, which covers my fear like camouflage. Unfortunately, even if he can't see it, I think he can smell it. Chapter 2. Ember. A little while later, some random Tulgin shoves me into a room and bolts the door behind me. I need to take a page from Melody and Celine's playbook. No one pushes them around. They also don't have a big-ass mouth like I do, so that could be the issue. I glare at the closed door. Cocksucking, orc-fucking asshole! Celine smirks. Tell us how you really feel. I think she did, Melody says, and then presses her lips together. My smile is reluctant, but persistently tugs at my mouth until I give in. Sorry about that. I let out a groan of quiet rage and plop down onto the nearest bed. What is this place, anyway? It's our room, Celine says, gesturing to the plain space. It's made up of four beds, a fireplace, and what I hope is a bathroom. That cocksucker, as you referred to earlier, told me that on the way here. We're roommates. Not exactly Alpha Beta Kappa, but it's better than Alpha Fucka Humana. Melody's eyes nearly bug out of her head, and I snort. Seriously, she says, properly taken aback. You two are going to corrupt me. I just know it.
Obviously.
Celine walks over to one of the beds and drops onto it with a sigh.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?